session number 23187, Reel 2.
Mr. Ashcombe, Reel 2. The next thing really is your call-up. I believe you were called up, you didn't volunteer. Would that be correct? Or
half correct. I originally, like lots of other fellows of my age, the only thing we wanted to do was to fly planes. And the it was basically a case of what was known as PNB, which is pilot, navigator or bomb aimer. The other became a wireless operator, air gunner and navigator, but I wanted PNB. And I was called up for an interview. This was a volunteer thing. And I went through the various tests, and then I had the face-to-face interview. And they seemed to think that I would be suitable as an air gunner, which, of course, was not the thing I wanted to do. I wanted something with a bit more mental power in it, shall we say. And they spent quite a lot of time saying, well, when bombers crash, they often, the tail drops off and the rear gunner gets away with it. And it wasn't until after the war that I found out, basically, why they were only offering me a gunnery job.
And what was that?
Well, it would seem that they'd the Empire training scheme, and there was another American scheme as well, that were trained. They had plenty of pilots and navigators and bomb aimers, and but they were looking for gunners. You know, getting tongue-tied here. The Luftwaffe planes had come up at the rear, and so it was the air gunner, the rear gunner, tail end Charlie, that used to cop it. And then they realised that they were copping it anyway, the Luftwaffe, and they were told to make a head-on attack. But that's another story.
That's why they were short of air gunners.
That's what they were looking for at the time, which is typical Air Force procedure. They don't necessarily put you in a job that you would excel at. They put it in where the necessity is. And I heard loads of instances after the war where they'd even been trained in Canada, and they came back and they had to remuster straight away.
So you rejected this, so you didn't volunteer.
So I signed on in the normal way when my sign-on day came.
And that's you were called up, I think, on the 16th of August 1943. What was the whole of the call-up procedure, as far as you remember?
Well, as I say, when I had to go and register, I stated a preference for the Air Force. I thought just because they only offered me a gunner at the time, that didn't put me off the Air Force. So I stated a preference for the Air Force, and having been in the Air Training Corps, they decided it was fit that I should become. I could go in the Air Force, and I went on a trade test board, and they decided I could. I expressed a liking for radio.
Was the trade test board when you were actually in the RAF or before?
No, I think this must have been before. My memory is not too clear on that. I remember I went on one when I came off the radio course. I went over to West Drayton, and
so that is later when you were in. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So where were you first sent to? When you were called.
Well, we were called up to that beautiful place called Cardington, where they had all the old airships, and we all know the story of an airship that left Cardington.
The R101.
The R101.
So you were joining number 2 reception centre, Cardington.
That's right.
And that was in August 1943.
That was to kit out.
Now, how did they take you in and kit you out from the rest of it?
Well, we had our travel warrant up to Cardington from King's Cross or wherever it was. you all jump in a coach and you go into the camp, and the main gate slam behind you, and you decide, that's it, that's the end of my civilian life. And so they kicked you out. I don't know what other things we did. We weren't there that long.
Do you remember what they kitted you out with?
Yeah, we had two sets of best blue in those days, two or three shirts and a tie, and I think it was Airtech's underwear, two pair of RAF boots, and I mention this specifically because you will hear how the changes came about. And I always remember we had I think it was a flight sergeant while we were collecting our gear, and no doubt many people have seen pictures of service personnel getting kitted out. You just get a big sack in front of you, and there was this Scottish flight sergeant that said, I'm not very good at with accent, but it was a case of the first man to drop his kit will finish up in cookhouse. In other words, jankers. And that was my spell at Cardington. And then
that was just a matter of 3 days.
Well, exactly. We were. That was a reception centre kitting out.
Now, the next reception centre you went to was number 11 reception centre, and that, you were there from August to October. Now, where was number 11 reception?
Well, we went up by train, and we stopped off in Peterborough on the way. I don't know whether it was a case of we had to change trains, but they actually allowed us a couple of hours to have a roam around Peterborough, which was nice because that was the first time since the main gates banged behind us. And then we went on to Skegness.
That's where it was, at the number 11.
Yeah.
And what were your first impressions of the camp at Skegness?
Well, it wasn't a camp. It was, we weren't in civvy. Well, some were in civvy billets, but mainly they were houses taken over just to sleep in. And we'd have our mess.
What were the billets like?
Civilian houses, purely and simply. Not beautifully furnished, there was a table and chair and a bed sort of thing.
No, the civilians are gone.
Oh, yes.
And if we sort of take you through a typical day, because you were there about 3 months, doing your basic training, I presume.
Marching, mainly.
If we go through a sort of typical day, we can pick up lots of things. About what day would your day start?
Not very late, early in the morning. And then you'd have to go to cookhouse to get your breakfast.
Now, that's one thing. Let's look at food then. What did you think of the RAF food? Your morning, afternoon?
I've got no recollection of the food whatsoever.
So the training sessions. You mentioned drill. You'd had a fair bit of drill from the ATC and from the Boys Brigade.
Yeah.
Was it any different? And how did you take, how did you take to having to repeat it all?
Didn't worry me. I wouldn't have been in the Boys Brigade team if I hadn't enjoyed doing it. And, of course, I wouldn't have stayed in the ATC if I didn't want to know, because it was mainly drill in those days.
What did you like about drill?
Well, it was getting it all together. Trying to work with the next bloke, make sure you do a right turn and he doesn't get his right hand and his left hand mixed up.
So it was a teamwork aspect you liked?
Don't know about that.
What about, did you understand the point of it all? Why you had to do so?
Discipline. That was purely and simply drilling into you discipline. Because under active conditions, the boss man as well, they weren't referred to as the boss man in those days like they are today. You were told to do something and you would do it. And that's it. We used to get our naffy break, morning and afternoon.
Now, what was the naffy like? Because
just a cafe. You see, this was purely a town thing that they'd taken over various buildings to use as various things. And one of these, it was obviously known as a naffy break. Whether they were naffy personnel, and do I need to explain naffy?
Not really, no. But just what the canteen provided for you in your break.
Tea and a wad.
Cake.
Yes. Once again, it was that was the slang of the time. And I remember one had a piano in it. And so, because I'd learnt piano, as I said, as a kid, and then I started playing a side drum in the boys' brigade. Not very good at either of them, but that will all be explained later, sort of thing. And when we fell in on parade after our break, the sergeant said, "Who was that playing piano in the naffy this morning?" So, of course, remembering the old adage, never volunteer for naffin, I stood fast. And then he said, "Come on, who was playing piano in the naffy?" And the guy behind me pushed me out front. I was in the front rank, and he pushed me out front. He was in living with the family, the sergeant. He said, "Oh, the daughter in my family, it's her birthday tonight. Would you like to come and play piano around there?" So I had quite a nice little thing that became semi-regular. You know, I'd go around and visit with the family.
Now, what other types of training did you get? I know you've said most of it was drill, but did you do anything else? I mean, a bit of rifle work?
Yeah, we did a bit of rifle work. I can't remember where we went, whether we actually went to any bats at that time. I think we must have done there, because that was, well, once that's the last time. So we probably did five rounds, which wasn't rapid fire, of course, you know. And I quite enjoyed that, whenever it was. Well, of course,
Did they make a proper effort to teach you how to fire the rifle?
Oh, yes. They don't say, "Here's the number, the Mark II. There's your clip of five bullets. Put them in." It all went through it. But it was strictly down to rifles there, I think. I don't think we touched stem guns there.
What about bayonet work?
Yes, we probably did a bit of bayonet work in, out on guard, you know, and all that jazz. But it wasn't a battle training, let me put it that way.
Anything else you were trained in while you were there?
Memory again.
Let's talk about the trade test, because at some point, across either earlier or at one of the reception tests, you must have had this trade test. What were the trade tests?
No idea.
You don't remember them?
No. I think whether it was a case of you had a choice of trades, and I thought, well, I always had a crystal set as a kid, and I used to listen in when I went to bed. And I wanted to know a bit more about radio. So I originally signed as radio direction finding mechanic. They altered it in the end, because by the time I got there, after I'd written to Innsworth and they came back this RDF bit, I said no, it was then known as radar/wireless mechanic.
Now, so anything else happened while you were at Skegness? One thing I should have asked perhaps is, how did you get on with your fellow recruit?
What?
Were they all from the same sort of background as yourself, or higher or lower? Or
mixture. Yeah. But
any bullying?
No. Well, they were only, you see, we were all recruits. It was a civilian area. And you had the corporal that marched you all over the place, and probably a sergeant. And one thing I remember, you may think this is funny, when we had the full, because there are various fields around which are now all gone, the officer commanding the wing. I forget what the wing was. Did they put the wing down?
No, they haven't. No.
No. There was a wing number. He was one arm squadron leader. And that was borne out by the fact some years ago that a guy that followed me in also remembered it, because we are both on the team at Hendon.
So, what about your instructors? How did you get on with them? I mean, what did you think of them, your drill instructors?
Well, didn't have any... We didn't have any problems.
What were they like as instructors? I mean, did they know their stuff?
I would say so. PTIs or DI, physical training instructor or drill instructor.
And how did they treat you? I mean, was it all shouting and bawling, or were they more calm? Or swearing, that sort of
thing? To an extent, but not like you see it overplayed on television. No, I don't remember that much from up there.
Were they fair?
Oh, yes.
And what about your officers? Do you have much contact with them? You
mentioned
No. So, you were there about 3 months. Not much else about that. And then the next move was in 21st of October. You went to number 7 radio school.
That's
now, where
right.
was that?
That was the Northern Polytechnic in Holloway Road. And we were billeted behind, up on Highbury Fields. Once again, in ordinary billets, not army, because once again, that was a civilian area. We were billeted just behind the Cossa radio factory.
What were the billets like? Same as before, just ordinary houses?
Yeah.
Comfortable enough?
Didn't spend much time in them.
And tell me about the course from start to finish. How did they start you off? Had you any experience other than your crystal radio experience?
Well, I can sum that up quite easily. No.
So how did they start you?
Because it was split into 4 6-week sessions. And the first 6 weeks were basically up to matriculation standard.
In what? In?
Well, physics and things like that. Light poles repel and unlike poles attract and things like that.
So basically a physics course?
Yeah, well, what I would have learnt at school up to 16.
And how did you take it? I mean, could you follow it okay?
More or less. I got through the first 6 weeks. And then the second 6 weeks, it started getting a bit hairier.
And what was the second 6 weeks?
Well, it was more to do with radio. You know, valves and condensers and resistors, which is what the condensers were called in those days. And then the test after 3 months combined the first 6 weeks. Well, I managed to scrape through with that.
Well, why did you find the wireless more difficult? I mean, they actually, you know...
Well, you can't see what's happening in wireless. They tell you funny little current is running through wires and it only goes one way on a certain wire and things like that. And I found it rather difficult. I don't think that... You see... It was a 3-year course in 6 months. And I even went up to one of my old school teachers. He lived up the road. I don't know whether he actually taught me at school. And I asked him if he could describe it. And I couldn't cut it with him describing it.
You scraped through that thing. Now, before we started, you mentioned you had a fairly... interesting nightlife at the time. You were interested in going down to think. What were your recreations in the evening? What would you do?
I go down to Holloway Road Station because, as I say, we're up on Highbury Field, so it was some walk away from the place. We'd have to go back to the billet to wash and change and shave or whatever, you know. And Holloway Road, down to Leicester Square and into the Queensbury Club. And there are one or two leaflets from the Queensbury
what
Club.
What was the Queensbury Club? That's in Soho, is it?
Yeah, still there.
And what was it like? What did it? Why was it so good? Why did you want to go?
Well, it was a service. It was a services club.
We've just found a programme for one night, and it's the Queensbury All Services Club. You've shown me a special RAF night. What was it like there then?
Well, it was still the original setup. It was tiered. It was quite a large place, and there was a band there, and you could dance. And they occasionally, as you see on there, you had various stars, or sort of stars, and I don't know that I know a lot of them anyway, but it was entertaining. Nothing to do with ENSA, Every Night Something Awful, which ultimately became Combined Services Entertainment anyway. But
you just go there, and you meet girls there as well. They'd be allowed.
Well, it was all services, because there were WAFs in those days, there were ATS, and occasionally you get a Wren in there.
So you'd be in uniform, or not?
Oh, you always wore uniform, in that you had no civilian clothing. If I remember rightly, that was all sent back home from Cardington.
Now, you mentioned the army boots.
I mentioned the RAF boots.
RAF, sorry, yes, the RAF boots. Was that relevant at this point, or is that later?
Well, you could say it'd be relevant later.
Okay.
But the RAF boots were different to the army boots.
We'll come back to them when you say. So, you were having talk. Do you think your regular visit? I mean, how often would you go to the Queensbury Club? I mean, was it?
Obviously, I've got a couple of RAF nights there, so I would more be likely to go when it was an RAF night there. But it wasn't every night. You know, we had to do a bit of studying. But this is the thing: I cannot cram. I can learn a thing and 15 minutes later I've forgotten what it's all about. The only way I basically learn things is parrot fashion.
So you had
constantly hearing it night after night, you know. That's the only reason, the only way I can learn.
Do you think your visits to Soho put you off a bit? I mean, distracted you a little from your studies?
No, because I used to get a bit, not distressed, but when I find I couldn't cram it all in, it was something to...
So you'd have failed anyway, you think? Yeah, I mean, you weren't going to pass.
Yeah, no.
If it had been a three-year sort of longer course, you might well have been able to do it from the sounds of it. But
I might well have done. Well, more of that anon sort of thing, you know.
So what happened? You got through the second set of exams. What was the third course?
The third one, it was just getting harder and harder, and I've still got my books down there.
So what was it on? Was it?
It was still radio, you know, but it was getting more involved. Like you know, like City and Guilds, they take you through various aspects of radio. And then I was just tested on that third 6 weeks. But then when we came up to the full 6 weeks, I realised I wasn't going to pass. I didn't know a thing. So I probably went out a bit more at the end of the course, knowing I'd be posted as well. And, of course, I failed. The only thing I passed on was soldering.
Soldering?
I was very good at soldering, and we used to have to make special tags up and all that. And they thought I was swinging the lead. So I thought, well, what I wanted to do radio, you know. So, yeah, this was the Flight Lieutenant Educational Officer. We had civilian instructor in there, actually. And at that time, all the radar, well, I don't know, it was the radar mechanics, where if you passed with a high mark, you went up to Bolton, which was the extended radar course, and they were all going out to Burma. So we were all going around with a big twitch. I'm not going to Burma. I'm not going to Burma. As service personnel do.
Anything else about your time?
I think we had a bit of a band and we had a bit of a blow, but it was nothing on that I greatly remember.
So the next thing would be, I think it was April 44, you must have finally failed, or you seem to, that's when you went to 5013 Squadron.
By and large, yeah. But funnily enough, there was just a little quip on that course. I've still got a couple of photographs of the guys that were on the course with me. There was a guy called Weizensang. Well, of course, all the instructors used to have a job pronouncing Weizensang. So we all used to call him Blitzy, and he lived in Jubilee Street in Hoxton, is it? You know. And funnily enough, I saw Jubilee Street on the television yesterday, you know, in relation to the Golden Jubilee. But of course, all the houses have changed because they had a picture of years ago houses there.
So, what happened when you failed? You'd fail in, well, it'd be...
Well, our station headquarters was at Kensington. So, of course, I had to take all my kit to Kensington, and because when I was there, I used to go home weekends, Saturday lunchtime to Sunday evening, and so through the week. But of course, dirty devils that we were, we had to be on parade at 8 o'clock before breakfast, and we had to get down from Highbury Field, so we wouldn't have a wash. We used to sleep in our shirt and underwear, not that they gave us pajamas, and we used to dive down there. We did play football as part of the sport come recreational thing, and ever since my school days I was against football for reasons that wouldn't really be relative here. And we used to go up to Parliament Hill Fields, and I used to stand at the back of the crowd when they were picking football teams. And any of us that were left over, make yourself scarce for a while. And there was a cafe at the bottom of Parliament Hill Fields, and it's still there. And I think it's the same paintwork that is on it. And at that time, some of the Tottenham footballers used to go in. Not that we saw them, but there were pictures around, you know.
Despite that, you were having trouble in the course, but the lifestyle doesn't seem too bad.
Well, you had a uniform, and most of the guys were in the service, and I think it was a case that it was easier to pull in uniform.
So what happened next then? When you actually failed, you had to go to Kensington?
I had to go to Kensington, which was station headquarters, and I kicked around there for a while with all the Polish counts that were drawing a lot of money, you know, because they've been kicked out of Poland and all that. And that's when I was posted to 5013 Squadron.
Now, had you asked for that posting or in any way? Or
no, well, I think it was at that time, while I was still there at Kensington, that I went over to West Drayton for a trade test. And the usual silly things of square pegs in round holes, you know, physically putting square pegs in round holes and things like that. And on the list of trades at that time was instrument repairer, which I thought, well, it's in the same sort of sphere. It's not like being a cook or something like that. So I opted for instrument repairer, or instrument basher, as we used to...